cabbages? What kind of slum do you think this is?
Alex is feeding her cows.
My moo cows.
How's it going, friends of Mineral Town?
So anyway, guys, I'm Zach.
And I'm Alex.
And this is...
My Cabbages.
An Avatar podcast.
Hope everyone is enjoying this beautiful sunny weather, although I can't speak for what the weather's like where you live. Here in Pittsburgh, we're actually getting a sunny day.
I know, it's such a rarity.
It's almost spring or something.
This place in February is like that Liam Neeson movie, The Gray. The only thing that's missing is the wild wolves chasing us down and eating us one by one. And just you wait, folks.
I mean, who's to say that that's not still something that could happen? 2021 is still fresh and new.
That's true.
It was around this time, actually, that we still had hope for 2020.
So, we're going to open the show, and we're going to talk about some big fucking news. It's going to kind of be old news by the time, you know, we... sort of
release this,
get our chomp at
think,
it. Yeah,
well, I think it's this news right about now, not trying to give away like a recording schedule or anything, but I think this news is about 2 weeks old right about now. Uh-huh. And we haven't tweeted about it because we wanted to talk about it on pod, but it's gonna be probably another 2 weeks before this gets released. So but at any rate,
we are,
what's so big of a news that you want to share with us, babe?
We are the Slowpoke meme. And if anybody knows what that meme is, you'll realize that I am the Slowpoke meme for referencing the Slowpoke meme. this new thing that's happening, Paramount Plus. So first of all, I have to shamelessly say that I am very impressed. I was already subscribed to CBS All Access for Star Trek because I can't live without my Star Trek. Yeah, so Paramount Plus just got this big library of Nicktoons, and I was subscribed, like I said, to CBS All Access, so they automatically made me on Paramount Plus, and I signed on, and this is not a plug for Paramount Plus. They didn't give us any money. I fucking wish. But they have, all my old Nicktoons, my childhood. We scrolled through the library of Nicktoons on this fucking streaming platform, and, every three shows, I or Alex was like, oh my god, that's really it.
Yeah, we remembered all of them. We were flailing on the couch. I was a Nick Jr. kid. I probably like some Nickelodeon shows better than Disney. I mean, definitely Rugrats, and then the later version, Rugrats All Grown Up. But the one that I was probably most excited about is the show that I have not been able to find anywhere, not on a Plex, not on any streaming, not in any bootleg, but Rocket Power is...
I was gonna say, are you talking about Riders on a Mission? So where are we going with this preamble that at this point is almost longer than the Return of the Kings ending?
Hey, we haven't flashed out and flashed back in. These people are still expecting a pod after this.
That's true. Nick got together and they were like, hey, our numbers on Netflix kind of exploded this summer. They kind of exploded. We didn't realize that this really beautiful and awesome and nuanced thing that Brian and Mike had made was popular with so many people. Well,
who would have thought?
Well, gosh dang it. Maybe we should give them some money. So they did. And it's called Avatar Studios. And they're making more Avatar content, folks. The Avatar creative engine, they shoveled some more coal into it. It's going to destroy the atmosphere, but we're going to get some sweet, sweet, dank Avatar. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, fans were asking for a fourth season of the original series, the elusive Air. Book 4 Air, but instead we get an entire studio starting off with how the real live, or a real full-length movie that is just going to blow all this out of the water. So I guess what I'm trying to say, babe, is we now know the real reason Brian and Mike left the Avatar live action remake.
Yeah, yeah, they totally jumped ship. Nickelodeon scalped them like a hot ex that they couldn't get out of their minds. Nick was like, hey, drop that new honey that's trying to stamp all over your creative work. Come work for us again. You remember how it was? Come on back, baby. Like, Nickelodeon was outside of Netflix Studios with a boombox, like, holding it up.
Baby, come back!
It was, what's his name? Oh, we made this joke the pod.
Say Anything was the name of the movie, right?
Yeah, it's Say Anything, John Cusack.
Yeah, John Cusack. You were very proud of coming out of doming from the dome the name John Cusack.
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really was.
It's an achievement. Achievement unlocked.
Nickelodeon really realized, and what I realized when we were going through the library was that, yeah, I think Nickelodeon, like a full Nickelodeon library of like the classics was something that, you know, you got a little bit of, like, we got excited when Hulu or like some of our favorite Nick classics like Hey Arnold came to Hulu, I think. Wasn't it Hulu?
Yeah, Hulu.
Yeah, it came to...
Oh, yeah. I remember watching the shit out of that. I've watched through Hey Arnold probably twice since it's gone to Hulu.
Yeah, so we were all excited, but little did we know that was just the tip of the iceberg. And Nickelodeon was like, huh.
Side note, Arnold is supposed to be, like, a poor kid living in, like a tenant house full of apartments. But he has the fucking swankiest bedroom. New York bedroom in the history of fucking time, okay?
It's got the skylight.
This bedroom would sell as a one-bedroom apartment for, like, $3,000 a month in New York.
Okay. Maybe, like, $2,500.
I don't know what rent is like in New York. I daren't speak its price.
But anyways, I think this is a really exciting...
It's really, really great.
And, I mean, well, babe, I hope people like hearing us talk for a while. I think maybe we're at least a little funny because we thought all we had to work off of was 3 seasons of Avatar and 4 seasons of Korra.
Yeah, we thought this podcast had like either a duration or at some point a transition to another cartoon. But it looks like we might be munching on them cabbages for many a years to come if we all jump behind this project. This is why it's important to, like, we need to, when this content drops, if it's good, there's a chance that it won't be, but Brian and Mike behind the helm, I think it'll probably be at least a culmination of all of their years of skill and forethought. We need to support it. Don't pirate the movie when it comes out. Pay for a month of Paramount Plus and watch it that way.
Do what we did last night. We swallowed the bitter pill.
We did.
And we paid $30 to watch Raya the Dragon Princess, Raya and the Last Dragon on Disney Premier Access. Because that on demand, we couldn't wait. You know, there's no Blockbuster we can run down the street to rent this from. All the theaters are still closed. So guess what? It was well worth it.
Do I think that Disney still gouges with the $30 price tag? Yes, I think is a bit excessive. But this movie slaps, y'all. We really enjoyed it. It's very Avatar adjacent. It really feels like it has a world that is kind of almost divvied up in a similar way to Avatar, and it has a very like Avatar like lore. I don't know. It's spellbound me. It took me away on a wonderful adventure. Raya's good.
It was great, and you know, I could spend a whole another 10 minutes just gushing about this movie.
I think
it will have to wait till I don't know, a Patreon perhaps.
You beat me to it. So this is what's up, guys. We're definitely thinking about doing a Patreon. We're gonna be pulling the stuff together to get it rolling here in the near future. No dates just yet, But we want to hear from you guys. If we want people in, if people want to join the Patreon, we want to hear from them about what kind of content we're going to put out on that Patreon. We talked about doing like movie sequel or movie trilogies. We wanted to go through the Lord of the Rings, maybe the Matrix, who knows? All kinds of ideas. We could do old Nicktoons. We do all kinds of stuff. Twitch, streaming, you name it. But tell us what you want. Tweet at us, at CabbageCast. Let us know.
You can also email us, mycabbagecast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and so we're really excited about this new Avatar stuff. I think it's going to be great. It doesn't speak well for the Netflix live action. They have to try to pick up the pieces and make something salvageable after the creators and inspiration behind the show have left for better, for greener pastures.
I think what Brian and Mike realized, and this is something that some of our fans, like Time Lord Iroh, shout out, have pointed out, is that there's something so magical about the original series. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, that it's animated, it's the whole style and like these characters that were built in this medium and the whole world fleshed out. And I think that there's obviously things that get lost in translation when you go from animation to live action. And that is the case for any movie or, you know, adaptation, you know, from book to film or whatever the case may be. But I really think that they realized that it's the original, the magic came from that animated. The fans still love the comics that are coming out. And yeah. I think that when they realize the amount, the whole world, and how much it easier is to create, right? When the world came to a halt last year and all filming on major projects stopped, whereas, you know, people, many creators on these animated were already working from home. So like it was much easier to move that pipeline. So I think
that's probably very true.
There's a lot that probably went into this. But I think it was a very smart business decision on Brian and Mike's part, you know, seeing like the longevity of this project, and Aitha being true to the, original creation.
I'm glad that Nickelodeon came to its fucking senses and finally funded their best IP, like by far, by a country mile, their best IP. It's nice to see it get the attention and budget that it deserves, and I can't wait to see
20 years later, right. But the Avatar Renaissance upon us, folks.
Yes.
And we
have to thank Netflix for it, even if this new series is terrible, which we will definitely be reviewing potentially on our Patreon, we'll see. We have to thank Netflix for like bringing Avatar back into all of our lives last summer so that a whole new generation of people could discover it and our fan community could grow like 100-fold. So I'm stoked about that. You're stoked about that. We have an episode to get to, though.
We do. So without further ado, babe, I think this news supersedes anything that I did in my personal life this week.
Yeah.
So let's just get to it.
Let's get to it. This is Avatar, The Last Airbender, Book 2, Earth.
Chapter 3, Return to Amashu. We get the last time on Avatar.
This last time, yeah. Previously on Avatar, right.
And if you all remember last time, our friends are excited. The gang is going back to Amashu to try and find King Bumi, to find Aang
an earthbending teacher.
Yes, an earthbending teacher. And they, as soon as they crest over the hill, it goes from Omashu to Onoshu.
we learned that COVID has not been kind to Bumi Exotics Zoo.
Yeah.
2020 was not its friend.
Much like our friend Joe Maldonado Passage.
That's right.
AKA King Bumi, AKA Joe Exotic. The Tiger King of Amashu.
Yeah, it's very clear that the park has not been in good hands. It may have, in fact, even been swiped by none other than, what's her name?
Carol Baskin.
None other than Carol Baskin herself. We realize it's bad. We see the flags of the Fire Nation. It's not looking good. The crew realizes that the city has fallen, and they get ready to just, you know, up their shit and move on. And Hank's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
This isn't about finding a teacher. This is about finding my friend.
Wait a second, y'all.
My bestie's in there.
That's my childhood bestie in there, you heartless pieces of shit. Like, come on, we gotta go get him out.
Sokka asks, well, how do you propose we get in there? It's, like, overrun by Fire Nation soldiers, and we don't even know where Boomy is. And he's like, well, here we go, and...
Aang's like, don't worry, guys, I got the fix. Smash cut to a sewage pipe on the perimeter of Amashu. Sokka's like, why didn't we just go here last time? Get in this way last time. And Aang was like, because I wanted to try out my old man impersonation, of course. Come on, what do you think? What do you think I hadn't picked out the name Omnicronopolis before in the past?
Oh, Mr.
Abercrombie and Fitch.
Padalopsicopolis?
Yeah, that might actually...
Padampopalopsicopolis. Yeah, well...
Dr. Yanni at the necropolis.
They're going through the sewer, and it is...
It's gross.
Yeah, but Aang is able to make it tolerable. He's airbending to make a current go... over him, and Katara is water bending a nice little ball of water, and then you know, it's like the human centipede and of things. Sokka.
Should I eat a cuttlefish and asparagus or the vanilla pesto?
Oh fuck. Just like in the human centipede, the one at the end gets all the shit.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the one non-bender, Sokka, is...
At least he's keeping hydrated, folks.
Oh. I wonder what brand of instinct this will be marketed as.
Sewer sheep instinct.
So yeah, they finally get out of this sewage drain pipe, and Sokka finally climbs out, and he's got sludge all over him because he doesn't have magical stay clean
powers. Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, he's the creature of the Black Lagoon, and Katara is like, "Whoa, I can barely hear what he's listening to. I should probably see what's going on here." And she sprays him with water. She finds out that he's actually wearing the brand new Raycon E20XL earbuds.
They're in pixie purple.
They are, yeah. They're coming in all kinds of new colors these days, folks. Sokka's sporting them. He looks really good.
Or should I say pentapus purple? What is a pentapus, you ask? These adorable little creatures that... actually now rank second on my overall list.
In terms of Avatar Pokemon, these guys are pretty high up the list, yeah, let's be honest.
The first and forever faves will be the Qual Otters, and then the second are now the Pentapus.
See, I'd put the second at still the Turtle Ducks.
Turtle Ducks is a...
These guys are a razor close third.
Is a solid third.
These, you know what they remind me of? They remind me of the brain-sucking... aliens in Futurama get stuck to people's heads.
Well, he's freaking out because he can't get them off, and then
he's freaking out because of the incredible sound fidelity of these insanely good earbuds.
Aang comes over, clearly seeing that they're too loud, and he doesn't know how to turn the volume down. So he just, in just the right spot, presses, and now these cute little pentapus like curl up and pop off, and they make the cutest little noises. Mm-hmm. And
it's like Aang is like a Hiccup in How to Train Your Dragon. He just like tickles the pentapus in just the right spot, and it's just like
a perfect little creature. I'm probably gonna add to one of my D&D worlds.
Oh yeah.
Then Sokka is just like, oh, they have these gross hickeys, like oh, maybe I can just, like, make up this story about how this, like, I can only imagine Sokka at the bar. And ask, like, oh, yeah, what happened there? And he's like, oh yeah, you know. And
I was, comes up with this I was attacked, story. I was attacked by the suction cup arrows of the tiny pygmy fairy tribe.
And that's how I got this black eye. By giving Jack and Crazy Fish the whopping of a lifetime.
Woo! He's probably still has a little bit of that toxic residuality. He'd be bragging that it was like, from some hookup sesh.
It's like there were five different girls. They all picked a different part.
Anyway, so, but no, or like, it's just, you know, he has scars that like are reminiscent. You like, he just came unplugged from the Matrix.
It's like, whoa. So then we get this scene where they're trying to be like nondescript. Like they pull the pentapuses off and he was like, hey, but I was listening to WAP. What are you doing? I was jamming out to WAP. And they were like, they're like, hey,
what's the matter with him?
He has pentapox, sir.
And Katara knowingly decides to like try to play it up, and she rolls a pretty convincing bluff check. It's pretty effective. I think because the pox looks so, the marks,
I think,
on Sokka.
This was a very, it was a combo bluff, but also knowledge, medicine or nature.
Maybe knowledge local, because she knows about the like rumor of pentapox. she rolls, and I guess because of Sokka's gang, like gnarly, like little marks on his neck, he gets advantage. She gets advantage on the roll, and she crushes it. And yeah, she's like, "These pentapox. He's got pentapox. Yeah, it's gross and highly contagious and horrible." And all of the Fire Nation guards, they kind of think that they know what she's talking about, even though they absolutely don't, because she makes it up off the top of her head. But what is it about Omashu and Katara making sweet bluff checks?
June Pippin Padalopsicopolis. Nice to meet you.
Don't think it's just Omashu. I think Katara is always the one to be quick on her feet. And
she does talk herself out of a lot of situations.
I'm very proud of these guards.
Yeah, they follow proper COVID etiquette.
I want to applaud the local health official from the town of Omashu, even if they are from the Fire Nation, for having great public health messaging.
We better go wash our hands and burn our clothes.
I'm not sure burning clothing is necessary.
Yeah, it's
but
a little bit extreme.
If that helps you sleep better at night, then so be it.
They're like, we gotta wash our hands.
Maybe that's their equivalent of just throwing it into the dryer for like 20 minutes.
Maybe we're overthinking this Fire Nation takeover. Maybe the Fire Nation has better public health than any other nation. So yeah, then they manage to get away from that, and we get a little scene with Azula after that, right?
Yeah, so we cut to Azula on her palanquin on her boat in,
and her old sage is busting some rhymes.
Yeah, the two sisters that have smoked too much like Marge's sisters in The Simpsons. If these two women are combinations of Marge's sisters from The Simpsons and the two eels, Flotsam and Jetsam, from that accompany Ursula in The Little Mermaid, because they're always talking in rhymes, or maybe even the two Siamese cats from Lady and the Tramp. I don't know. It's just a common trope.
Yeah,
it
feels like these two were like on the short list for the Golden Girls, but maybe didn't make the cut.
Cause I don't know. I think they're like sick of they're sick of Azula's bullshit, because they're like, hey yo princess, what all is this? You can't keep running around letting people know about you and your status. Your people have had it. You gotta go into hiding with a little more subtle rhyming.
Hey, girl, it's me. I failed my check. I'm sorry. I rolled it. Hold on. Let me roll it. Oh, Oh my god, I rolled a 1. I shot myself in the leg with an arrow. I didn't even have arrows on me. How did this happen? I'm in so much pain.
They are genius. Not only are they rhyming, but they're also being like making it so they don't need a job, because they're like, yo, I think you traveling with like the royal consort is giving you away. Like,
yeah.
We need to maybe go for a private Airbnb. Like, so what happens to the two of them? Do they just like fuck off?
Because yeah, Azula's
like, I don't see them.
Azula's like,
the rest of the episode.
I need to trim down our numbers. And the ladies are like, that would be unwise, girl, because then you'll get so stressed you'll want to hurl. And she's like, well, no, I meant I'm going to fire you too. And they're like, well, wait a minute, Azula. You should not fire your Rula. And she kicks him to the curb and she goes to get her team together. And we get like a Rick and Morty-esque moment where she has to go and round up the crew. Like this, like, you know, Ocean's 11, like round up. It's like that scene in that episode of Rick and Morty where Rick like decides to get the crew together and he's
like, for the bank heist.
Yeah, for the bank heist. He's like,
how do we get in?
With a little help from some old friends.
I hate the get the crew together part. That's the worst fucking part. But we're about to get that part and it's gonna be pretty entertaining, honestly.
Oh, it's gonna be Birds of Prey assemble. Yeah.
Yes, the Birds of Prey are gonna fucking lay some smack on the Avatar team.
So, we are introduced to
the Rob Lowe of this story.
The Jeff Lowe
of this story. Did you want to announce it?
But I wonder if Rob Lowe would play Jeff Lowe in the Tiger King.
They're like, listen, it would make the naming really easy. You would recognize your own name more readily. It'd be great.
There you go. I do think Netflix is doing a remake.
They're doing a scripted, yeah, like bio. So, like series.
Can't wait to see that, because, you know, with our friend Joe in prison, just like our
Tiger King of Amashu.
Yeah, which we learn here momentarily. But in the meantime, we're introduced to May, who is the daughter of this random governor.
She looks less enthused than Squidward at the day shift.
Inattentive, impatient, a glazed look in the eyes. Look carefully at the I really wish I weren't here right now button. There's a name for employees like this, but we'll call him
May.
I do feel for her. She's like, has zero desire to be here right now. Like, Wednesday Adam vibes.
Very much so. Yeah, we have my
May
and her parents, and her parents are going off about, oh, it's just so great to be here. Like, sure, we hate it, and it's awful, and we don't like it, but we get to be treated like royalty, and that's pretty dang cool.
Your dad's the governor.
Your dad's,
good day, governor.
Your dad's the governor, don't you know?
Hello, governor.
Listen, I know you don't like the heat and you don't like all of the bad weather and stuff, but dang it, I'm not going to do this accent anymore. I have a friend who would be very, very upset that I was doing the accent bad.
Yeah, no, but I'm totally digging her nails, and they are walking around the city.
Yeah, they're surveying the labor.
And they run into the Avatar, right?
Yeah, they run into Aang, who is pushing a out-of-control cart out of the way so that it won't hurt some Fire Nation workers. And they shine the spotlights on him, and they're like, look, it's the Avatar! And an amazing little chase ensues where Aang is dodging and ducking and weaving. He's doing the five Ds of dodgeball.
Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
May all of a sudden becomes Kate Beckinsale in Underworld and just starts throwing out these blades, and her nails become...
She's really adept at these blades,
weird
too.
Wolverine spears. It's wild.
She's a nail bender. Aang dodges these people for his life, and we cut to Azula's crew roundup. And the first stop is, it turns out it's Firefest Part 3. That's right, folks. They're trying a third time. The last two, first one ended with an open volcano. And the second one caused a huge fire because the Avatar appeared and caused a ruckus. Oh my fucking god, dog. Yeah. We had to settle the dog. There was an egregious offense that occurred on our in our vicinity, which was another dog.
Another doggo
dared walk by. To walk by on the sidewalk. Puck was affronted that he did not come over and make small talk and become instant besties with him.
Hey, 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 I'm here. Hi, do you see me? Hi, hi, I'm here, Mom. yeah, so, and one of my favorite things that Puck does when there's another dog or a person walking by and he is trying to make his presence known, and he will start almost, not barking, but whining this deep guttural whine, and he will run from the front door to the back door, which our back door on the main level opens up to a back deck, which is just a closed off like patio. It has a beautiful view of Pittsburgh, but it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's a dead end.
And I don't know, I think in Puck's mind, the dog will just magically be there.
Like a poo stick. The dog will just appear on the other side of the house randomly. So he'll run to the door and try to get out in time to see the dog. And of course he gets out there and doesn't see anything.
Anywho, yeah, so that's Puck.
We're at Firefest Part 3. I wonder if it's going to ignite in flame. So far, we've got a 2-for-2 record, and it's just a matter of time. So Azula's...
Well, as I say, well, we have Jeff Lowe and his wife, and the governor and his wife, and their new little baby. Azula in this episode, I think, is definitely Carol Baskin, like, yeah. Running and rounding up all her cool cat and kittens and all of her crazy volunteer friends.
It's funny, this is like the trash fire multiverse is like, we'll bring in... Carol Baskin goes to round up her crew, and of course the first place she goes is Firefest, because what else is a wonderful dumpster of a thing than Firefest?
Just thinking of all the notable people that went to prison last year, like, I mean, he went to prison not last year, but way before, but Billy, responsible for Firefest, and Joe Exotic, now in prison, so...
They should do a podcast together.
Yeah. Oh my god, that'd be hysterical.
If anybody was wondering whether or not he went to prison, yeah, he went to prison. He's in prison. He's gonna honestly, it's probably where he should be.
6 years.
Yeah.
He's already done two of them.
We meet Tylee, who got a job working at Firefest and doesn't know about its horrible history, and she's just very happy where she is. You know, she feels like her chakras are aligned. She's got all of her, like,
I'm really happy here. I mean, my aura has never been pinker.
All of her key points are, like, at an all-time high. She gets, like, 4 key points a day to spend on different attributes. It's awesome. She's just really, like, in touch with her spiritual side.
Aura, as she described, has never been pinker, which I guess for me means, she's glowing.
And so Azula's like, yeah, but I'm putting a team together. I want to hunt down my brother and my tiresome uncle. You heard of him, right? And
Margot Robbie's like, nah, girl, we ain't got time for that.
Yeah.
We got to go.
Bitch, get in. We're going to go hunting fire princes.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping. And by shopping, I mean we're gonna be murder hobos. It's gonna happen. We're gonna capture the Avatar. Well, and my brother.
Get in, girl. We're going Zuko hunting.
Good Zuko hunting.
Good Zuko hunting. So yeah, she, and Tylee's like, nah, I'm good. you know, I'm really happy here and I like where I'm going and I like what we're doing. And I haven't really been happier than this in a long time. And I just expect you to know, be happy for me and support me and support my endeavors. And Azula's like, oh, I do.
That's cute, girl.
I'll be there at your show.
I'm glad you're a little, like, happy life crisis. You're happy selling your MLM, like, leggings, and
it's like the false sincerity.
Your crystals are aligning with your chakras and all that jazz. But you know what? I want to see how this is really working for you. I'm just going to come to your show tonight, and you can tell me all about it. Show me what all this is all about.
Azula speaks with the sincerity of a gangster who's genuinely trying to convey that he wants to, that he wishes this person happiness that wants to leave the mob. He's like, listen, I want out. He's like, oh, no, of course. You take your beautiful family. You go down to the park. Nothing's going to happen to you. I promise. Okay? You just don't worry about it. I'm glad that you have taken this moment of growth. You're gonna do great. Yeah. Azula doesn't, or Tylee doesn't know that it's a threat yet, but it's a threat. I'm going to come to your show is a threat.
When Azula's talking to Tylee, she mentions, like, oh, hey, girl, like, we, like, our parents didn't send us like, the National Fire Academy for Girls.
The prissy, super, super exclusive school.
Just to, like, run off to the circus. And I just want a side. I really hope. Here, Brian and Mike. Take this. I don't care. Free fodder. I want to see, like, a little witch academia version of, like, the Bender all-girls school. Like, that would be so rad.
Yeah.
And it could have a different school for each different element, but I really want to see them all come together. That'd be great. Yeah. And
they could be like Hogwarts houses.
Like, what was Azula like at the Fire Academy? Like, oh my gosh, was she like the Diana Cavendish, like a little witch academia type? I don't think so.
You have
to
imagine.
Azula was like.
You have to imagine they built all of the Fire Academy buildings out of, like, stone and non-flammable materials, right? Any Fire Academy built out of wood is not going to last the summer.
Yeah, no. I think we're talking much more of a Mean Girls Regina George situation for Azula. Yeah.
So we cut back, and we're with Aang and the gang, and they're talking to some Earth Kingdom survivors down in the underground.
I'm a survivor, I'm not gonna give up, I'm a survivor, keep on surviving.
And Aang's like, what's going on? Where's Bumi? What happened? And the guy's going, yeah, we wanted to defend our city against the Fire Nation. We went to ask Bumi what to do, and Bumi was like,
I'm going to do nothing.
They were like, all right, it's your turn, Bumi. What do you want to do? And Bumi picked up his dice and went, see ya! And just went, all right, I'm not, I pass. I pass my action.
Bumi, they found out about your hit to take out Fire Lord Ozai, and it's not looking good, bro. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. They're going to find those bodies in our crocodile swamp.
They found out about the lemurs without the paperwork.
Yeah, they don't have the paperwork.
And Flopsy is no good.
Flopsy doesn't have his shots, and it's causing pentapox on a global scale.
Who would have thought that just like our friend Joe would end up behind bars.
Yeah. So
locked up.
They're like, we got to make a stand. We got to fight. And Aang's like, no, you can't. You cannot win. You will all just die. And that's no good to any of us. We don't have the numbers. We don't have the fortifications. And so Aang makes a really big growth moment here. Is he advocates for escape. Get out. Regroup and come back and then take your land when you are better prepared. You can't win in this situation. And it's cool. It's cool to see Aang, like, think like a strategist, you know?
I don't know, young. Living to fight another day is starting to sound pretty good to me.
So Sokka is like, hold up. Wait a second. And for Sokka, you know, the ever logical and critical thinker he is.
Yeah, he's got to make a mint off of his Raycon earbuds.
Today's sponsor is
no one. We don't get
sponsored. So
I want to break that illusion right now.
See, Sokka is like
last episode.
Sokka realizes he's not gonna get the follower count on Instagram that Aang has, and Aang's starting to get big on TikTok. It's like, okay, well, I guess YouTube is it. And you and Sokka, I definitely feel, has the more of the time for YouTube. He has some conspiracy theories, and it's probably where he has some not great friends.
It's where he hawks his instincts. He goes on YouTube and he's like, listen, all I need is 5 people to sell my products, and then they can all get 5 people to sell my products.
Oh my god, is Instinct an MLM?
I think Instinct is an MLM, yeah.
Not yet. It's
the origin story.
We're still... We'll see how it gets, how it evolves. Sokka was like, yeah, no, so I gotta find my sponsors, and just like every other up-and-coming, fledging YouTuber, Raycon sponsors every single ad, and it all is because Sokka was like, it all started here. He was like busting out and like hyping.
Sokka busts out a bunch of Raycons, and he's like, he's like,
you want them in purple?
He's like, this week's escape is brought to you by Raycon. Raycon, the big sound maker, plop these onto your head. You don't even need to plop them onto your head to hear this great, great big sound. You can plop them onto your leg or your arm or your shoulder or anywhere. And they also happen to leave these marks that make for a really great escape, because it'll make all the superstitious guards think that we're sick with a plague. Pentapox worked on the other guards. They're like, all right, let's go and just do it again. I'm sure it'll be great.
What could possibly go wrong?
And this is my thought, is if this was a darker show and this was like live action and they weren't advocating for children, 100,000% these Fire Nation guards would just torch all these people alive.
Yeah.
If this was a
true colonialism critique, that's how this would have ended.
Yeah. They wouldn't just let them out to spread the disease further throughout the land.
Yeah, but we see this, like, you know, oncoming swarm, and Sokka is to be like, you just don't have to look dead, you gotta act dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Take another look at the way he moves. Remember, Raylan. Almost like sleepwalking. Look at the face. It's vacant with a hint of sadness. Like a drunk who's lost a bet.
He's like, all right, give me your best zombie. And the old man, like, steps out of line. He's like, and Sokka's like, that's perfect. And the old man's like, what are we talking about? Like, he doesn't understand at all, but he nails it. He gets a natural 20 on his roll unexpectedly.
He actually just took a net 10 on it, because he knew it was going to be something that he was good at, and his proficiency bonus was going to get him there.
Anthony Birch is like, go ahead and roll advantage because you're old. So then they stumble out onto the main square, and the governor sees them, and the guards see them, and there's like this standoff moment where the guards don't know what to do, and they go, plague, plague, and they take off running, and they open the gates so that all the people can just leave, and they're like, all right, well, I guess that worked. That was great.
And while all this is happening, Jeff and his wife and the governor are just like, yeah, we don't know what to do. We just gotta get rid of these people. And their advice is like, yeah, we have to get rid of this plague on this city. And I guess he's just gonna let them leave.
He's like, just open all the cages. Just open them all. just open all the cages. It'll be fine.
We gotta get him out of here, let him leave.
So then it works. They get out, and Jeff is showing how good of a parent he is. He's like, oh, look at all the stuff that's happening outside. And his baby just fucking up and wanders away with no one watching, because great parenting. We get this really cute little scene where Momo...
That's the one thing that's lacking in this episode is good food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only scene with food in it is Momo.
And Momo agrees, because he's going in search of some.
Momo's looking for some sweet treats, and he finds some in the governor's pad, which is probably not the smartest place to be right now. But it's okay because the governor and his hot wife, Jeff Lowe and his hot wife are distracted by the plague that is now leaving the city, and they don't see Momo munching on some berries. But their baby boy does. This baby pulls like the mother of all like baby trapeze routines. He pulls on the tail of Momo, and there's this whole chase scene. Did you want to elaborate on this at all?
Yeah, I feel really bad because, maybe this baby in actuality is baby Jeff Bezos. We said Jeff Bezos came from Amashu.
That's right.
In our last episode, but no, I feel bad because this is Momo is probably like this is how Phoebe feels whenever we're trying to like cuddle with her, and she wants nothing to do with us, and. Or just insert boo kitty voice here.
Uh-huh.
But this kid can't vocalize, so he just starts pulling on poor Momo's tail, and Momo just is not okay with this, and his consent has not been granted, flies out the window, kid tumbles. Like a little tumbleweed down the roof, and in real life this kid would be dead. Yeah, in real life this kid would have ended up on the ground, but fortunately,
thank goodness, this is a cartoon.
Because of the
babies don't die in cartoons.
No, because of wonderful, and thank you to the wonderful mail system.
Mm-hmm.
He lands in the same cart as Momo and these berries.
This is pure DM intervention. No, nobody at the table wants to see a baby.
No one rolled for this. So it DM was just a decision was made.
The DM is just like, all right, yeah, the baby goes through this elaborate
universal
thing.
House rule: babies, horses, and dogs, and any other cute animals just cannot be.
They don't die.
Killed. Yeah.
So,
unless it's a revenge campaign like John Wick,
baby goes through a ridiculous sort of mousetrap esque maze of traps and dangers, and narrowly avoids all of them, and ends up on the ground where he sees the rest of the people walking out, and I guess Fire Nation guards just were ordered to open the gate and let everyone through, and then they all just. I guess got on Reddit and went on their phones and stopped paying attention, because anybody looking at the gates would have seen this little child in red clothes walking past the gates. But nobody notices, and nobody swoops in, and nobody sees anything. Baby just gets out with the rest of everyone.
Well, they were just letting him leave. They just opened the gates and let them leave.
Yeah, they were just like, all right, break time.
And, you know, so the... So Aang is... You know, he goes back to the city to try and find Bumi, and even though he is unsuccessful in his attempts, he does come across an old friend, one of Bumi's many
attractions. Yeah.
Flopsy.
Paperwork questionable, like all of his animals.
And so he is very excited to see Aang, and Aang is able to set him free.
She's at Ty Lee's performance that the night of, and it's Firefest, y'all. It's high wheeling in danger, and it's the third time around. What's gonna go wrong this time? Ty Lee's doing her slick routine. She's up there balancing, and Azula like calls over Billy, and she's like, hey, what, will she fall? She's like looking for what's going to go wrong. She can't wait to see. She's like, this is going to be a dumpster fire, or I am not getting my money's worth. And, she's like, no, of course not. She's not going to fall. It's like, so then let's get rid of
you
this.
You promised
net.
Me that there were VIP
yeah.
tents, and I don't see any VIP tents.
Right. I am a subscriber to Firefest on Patreon.
This should be, I'm making this the VIP tent, so set, and this is Firefest, shut that motherfucking net on fire.
Yeah, I want to see a fire, and if it's not going to happen, I'm going to order it to happen, so get on that shit. And they're like, all right, I guess we're going to burn down Firefest. And then she's like, hey, also, fuck Joe Exotic, but do you got any wild animals? And remember, she's the Carol Baskin of our story, so she wants to scoop on all these wild animals. And he's like, yes, we have all kinds of danger. And she's like, let them all go. just...
They're free. How dare you keep them locked in their cages?
How dare you keep them locked up? She's like, let them all go. And we don't get to see them all stampeding around, but we hear a lot of animal noises from outside of the tent.
Yeah, gee, just like, you know, that's the night it sounded like at Carol Baskin Zoo when her husband went missing.
Right. She's trying to feed Ty Lee to the animals, just like her late hubby. We get a scene after where Ty Lee is very clearly, like, traumatized. She realizes that she's not going to get a say in this, that Azula is going to very subtly threaten her and continue to threaten her until she accepts. So she turns around with a big smile and she says,
I'm sorry, Azula, but unfortunately there won't be a show tomorrow.
Really?
The universe has given me strong hints that it's time for a career change.
Out of threat of death, I realized that this is actually what I want instead. She very Stockholm Syndrome-esque, like, joins the team.
And she's like, yeah, she definitely, her aura, I guess, is no longer pink, but bright red.
Right. She's like, let's do this. Let's go and hunt down people.
So Aang returns and he's like, oh yeah, we have a new guest, by the way. Instead of an owl from Harry Potter, we get a Fire Nation falcon, and surprise, the Fire Nation's inept governor. They are convinced that the resistance, because this is Star Wars now, I guess, has stolen
their baby. Yeah.
Even though they just like open the gates and literally, they're like, all right,
the baby,
go ahead, you can leave if you want.
This is the kind of these are the kind of parents that, like, their baby, their young child comes home with an F on their worksheet, and they raise hell because the parent, because they think the teacher is singling out their kid. And it turns out, like, no, you're just bad parents. The baby walked out on his own, and now the resistance is on the hook for kidnapping this kid, which they did not do. So yeah, they see that they want to trade for Boomy, and they think it's a pretty good opportunity. So gears start getting set in motion. They're gonna go do this trade.
Yeah, so I guess she decided that the palanquin wasn't too much of a dead giveaway. Everyone travels by palanquin, right? Yeah. And anyone that is not needs to be abolished from the face of the earth, or constantly reminded of their place, which is below me.
You can get horse badgers to pull your palanquin, but it's more expensive to get humans to do it. So
honestly, I think that's a really interesting element of this episode. If you notice, throughout the entirety of the episode, Azula is always above everyone else. Like, if we're looking at levels, like, when she shows up in the first scene, she is up on, like, her throne with her two little, mm-hmm. her little eel women. And then
she's in a very high chair at the circus, too.
Circus, when she first meets Ty Lee, is upside down, which I think honestly is
intentional.
Yeah, very intentional, that perspective when we're first introduced to her. So from Ty Lee's perspective, which is the only time we cut to first person in the entire episode, from Ty Lee's perspective, Azula is, of course, upside down, and she but from Azula's perspective, she's above her. She's also, when she's arriving to meet with May, she is coming in on the palanquin when she's meeting with the governor after she recruits May on their little birds of prey mission.
Yeah.
She is also sitting on this throne, so yeah.
She's like, I want to form a team and go and round up your old bae. Are you down with that? And May's like, yeah, anything to get out of here. Fucking, I don't give a shit. So we're at the trade. It's time. It's the morning of.
Where were we, babe?
We're at the trade.
That's right. And no, we're not talking about watching those GameStop songs on Robin Hood.
That's right. Yeah, we're not talking about Robin Hood today. We're at the trade for King Boomy with the baby, and we see both sides. They're on this very aesthetic sort of bridge, or it's the scaffolding.
Yeah, well, after Azula has told the governor how shit much of a job he's done by letting and it's pretty much all like, yeah, public Azula's health, like, people saying, oh, yeah, you mean you went and you didn't have people wear masks, you just let them leave, you didn't put in any precautions. Y'all, this is what Texas and Mississippi and all the other southern states that are starting to lift their mask mandates are gonna look like come summertime. It's just the Biden administration is gonna come in and it's gonna, what did you think was gonna happen? But you know, we're not unfortunately gonna rename the city new Biden. It's gonna be please God no. But it will be new Ozai if Azula has her way.
Right.
Just like when Carol Baskin and now an IRL where our friend Joe in jail. Jeff was not running the zoo as was intended. The Yelp reviews just were terrible, and after Boomy was gone, and so the EPA comes, or Fish and Wildlife, whoever comes in, and they take it away and go to the courts, and now Carol's in charge. And
it's like that scene, and it's like that part in South Park where the FBI or whatever comes in, and whoever was in charge of the operation is like, "Hey," Azula strolls in, and the governor is like, "We're in charge of this operation." And Azula's like, "Not anymore, you're not." And he's like, "Ah, dang it." I'm Agent Johnson, and I'm Agent Johnson, and we're from the FBI. So then it's the standoff. And as I said, our parties are a good distance apart from each other. And we see the most hilarious thing. We see Joe Exotic descend from on high, like an angel clad in a steel coffin.
It's just like Joe Exotic, like when he's all glowed up with all of these filters and one of his lip syncing country music videos that he just then sell in the gift shop at his really shitty roadside zoo.
He's shifted to metal, and now he's singing steel plated coffin is the name of his new band. He's rocking out.
I saw a bunny. Bunny saw me.
Boomy would be a shoo-in for it, because he is just
having the best time.
He is clearly just entirely amused with the ridiculousness of the
Aang
situation.
Aang is pleased, at the same time, or relieved, but at the same time mortified.
Yeah, Aang is like, oh my god, what the fuck have they done to you? He doesn't even know if his body's like still in there. It could just be Boomy's head. So Boomy comes down and they're like, "All right, we need the baby." And Aang's like, "We got him. We just want Boomy." And it's very clear that Azula doesn't give a fuck about this governor's baby. And it seems like Mei doesn't give a shit either.
No, I think she's a kind of, I mean, you have to think, like, if this is her younger brother, Mei is clearly in her teens. So the age difference between these two, I would even go to guess that this woman is not even Mei's real mother.
Oh, that's probably fair.
Yeah, like, I'm sure we learn some more of Mei's backstory as the story goes on that I can't recall at this moment. But yeah, I would, if I were Mei and this was my younger brother, I would love him, but I would just be like, I at 17 or however old Mei is, she cares more about filing her nails to death points than she does about rescuing her younger brother.
Azula's like, "Don't you think so, Mei? This seems like a really rotten trade. I mean, it's a baby.
We're trading a 2-year-old for a king. A powerful earthbending king? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem like a fair trade, does it?"
I mean, if these were trading cards, if we were like trading like Yu-Gi-Oh cards, this would be a bum trade. This is like trading a Karibo for a fucking blue-eyes white dragon. It's crazy.
You're right. The deal's off.
Mei, who is a big fan of Yu-Gi-Oh, is like, "I understand your metaphor and I completely agree. The fucking deal's off." And they start to tow Boomy back up again.
We now get this battle that ensues, and Aang and Bumi.
This big, like, finish of an episode, which we've gotten a lot of lately, where just a big fight breaks out and lots of stuff is happening, and it's all really smart and well-coordinated, and just, I don't know. The pacing of these fighting scenes is just always so solid.
And of course, our boring droning on about it will never do the justice of watching this live in person, which is why you, if you haven't already, you of course should have watched this episode. We watch episodes multiple times because we
We're nerds.
Makes better pod, but also because we just love the show so much, and we can never get tired of it. So, yeah. But this awesome sequence ensues where Aang is navigating on top of this metal. Iron Maiden coffin for Bumi, like he's first a canoe.
Aang hops onto the chain as it's rising into the sky, and he's like blowing on it to try to break the chain. And while he's breaking the chain, while he's breaking the blockchain,
if you don't love me now, you will never love me again. This is where Fleetwood Mac got inspiration for the lyrics. You will just never break the chain.
Never break the chain. The whole time he's doing this, Bumi is like, wait, Aang, I got to talk to you about something. Hold on. Don't do this yet. And by the time he gets to a point where he can say what he wants to say, Aang swings the thing and breaks the ice. It breaks the chain, and Bumi goes flying. And Aang rights the canoe and blows air underneath of it and lands this casket on the slide, the mail chute. And yeah, this big, awesome little chase ensues where Aang is basically surfing on top of Bumi. Bumi's head's popping out of the casket.
And this is where we learn, oh, wait, and Azula is chasing after them. She is whipping out these fire yo-yo balls that
it's
are just
real exciting.
Wheeling after them. And then Bumi just throws this piece of earth at her. And at first you're like, whoa, was that Aang? And then you're like, oh, no. Turns out Bumi could have been bending this entire time.
Yeah, he could always bend because it turns out they didn't restrain his head. And his beard has incredible bending powers. Beard bending.
Unlike Joe Exotic.
Book two hair.
Unlike Joe Exotic, and this is where we get the fundamental difference, one of many, of course, between Joe and Bumi. But Bumi, of course, Aang is like, you could have escaped this entire time.
What are you doing? Why didn't you do anything? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
And this is where we get the nice little, you know, moral of the episode from Bumi in a nice teaspoon or tablespoon of our little expedition dump is
Bumi's like, listen, Aang, here's the reason that I fell. It's because of gin. I just drink a lot of gin. I'm fucking super drunk on gin right now.
I just produce it. It's a problem I have. That's actually a medical condition. Some people's bodies naturally produce alcohol. But anyways, we get a lecture on the different types of gin. And Aang's like, yeah, I know. There's negative gin and positive gin. One when you're fighting and the other when you're retreating.
And he's like, no, but there's a third gin, neutral gin, where you let your business partner take over your zoo and hope for a pardon from the president.
Or, actually, as Bumi points out, there's a lot of other gins, but we only have, let's focus on the third for now, which is not bathtub gin, or the other 10 million different other ways you can enjoy gin, as gin, we've learned Bumi likes to.
The fourth gin, bathtub gin.
That was my joke that I thought of earlier. Yeah. Like, the third type of gin is bathtub gin. Yeah. Can't trust it. If you need a guy that if he's gonna teach you the best earthbending, he's gonna have the best bathtub gin that you've ever tasted.
Normally
we don't condone underage drinking, and nor should we, but this is a different time and culture than your world, so
that's right.
In ours it's totally cool.
So we learn about all these strategic things. We learn that Bumi intentionally let himself be captured because he's waiting for his opportunity. And we don't know if, at this point, the jury is still out at this point, whether Bumi is just insane or if he's a genius. things always seem to work out, but that could easily just be coincidence and Boomy being, you know, a crazy person. But we, Aang realizes with a heavy heart that Boomy is up in his own projects and he's going to have to find his own earthbending teacher.
Yeah. So unlike, Boomy, who is very patient and understands that it is not his time, he still's got time left to serve and he will come be able to free himself eventually. Joe was a little overzealous and had, on the eve of the former President Trump's last night in the White House, was in...
Hang on, I just want to say that one more time. Former President. So dreamy. It's such a dreamy thing to say. Okay, go on.
And he was in... What were we doing? Why did...
Joe Exotic.
Thank you. Unlike our... on the very last... Or on the eve, Joe had a limo with his stylist waiting outside his jail, anticipating a pardon, which never came. And tragic. Who are some other people that got pardons instead, you might ask... Lil Wayne. Rappers Lil Wayne and Nipsey Hussle. Oh man, like the memes that have come out of this are just gold, pure gold. And everyone was like so just stunned when this did not happen. Actually, I think people were just upset because that means they're not going to get, you know, actual Joe Exotic to reprise his role in the Netflix show.
Yeah.
But hey, maybe we'll get a docu-series from prison. Who knows?
We'll get Serial season 4 or whatever, the Joe Exotic story.
I would listen to that.
Yep.
Well, as we continue with this, you know... Aang, I think, while upset, he understands, and Boomy reverse, just like the water in Raya, like when there's a dragon nearby, like he hits reverse
on the mail chute.
Yeah, flip it and reverses it back up the chute, and we will then have to wait until another day to be reunited with King Boomy.
He'll be back in Earthbender's Endgame.
We cue to Azula, and as she is leaving with her palanquin and her two friends, May and Ty Lee, who are walking next to it, which is just really weird. But shows again how Azula constantly, we're talking about heights here, has to be above because it's ultimately Azula who rides a chain up to fight and go after the Avatar. They're like, well, I guess we're going on this adventure to find your brother Zuko. Yeah, Zuko. And Ty Lee and Azula just look over at May and give her this look.
Yeah, I think all that's left after the final little Birds of Prey roundup scene is Aang flies back and gives Jeff Lowe back his baby. I wonder if the baby is better off with this kid, with this guy, or not. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say, yeah. But you know, that would be an interesting callback later, because you know that was one concern that the Earth Kingdom General did have, is that he's cute now, but when he grows up, mm-hmm. he's just going to be a deadly Fire Nation soldier, just like all the rest of them.
That kid would have been a cool like. Sort of middle-aged man plug in Korra. It would have been cool if that kid showed up in Korra, wouldn't it?
Hey.
You maybe know, he does.
Details yeah, just, to call back to you later.
Maybe he does. We just don't know. So then we get, yeah, the credits. That's the end of the episode. It was, yep. It was a really
Family's reunited. Mm-hmm. May gets to leave. Like, yeah.
So she gets to fuck off and go somewhere more interesting.
They get to hire. This is where the nanny really comes in. After their older daughter from a previous marriage leaves.
They're like, let's get a hot nanny and go to fucking Craigslist.
I'm sure that this kid now being returned to this Fire Nation governor and his young hot mistress are going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and the animals will, like always, suffer the most. Hey, babe.
Yeah?
Do you think you have some experience points to give out?
Uncle, do you realize what this means?
I won't get to finish my game.
Shouldn't there be a board or some pieces or something to jangle?
I won Dungeons and Dragons, and it was advanced.
Evil? Or maybe chaotic neutral?
The Demogorgon!
We're deep shit.
You've been shot by an arrow.
Ow!
Well, there'd be penalties to her experience if she acted out of alignment.
Yeah, I think that's that time again.
I'll go first.
Yeah.
I have my crit fail this week is definitely to this bit is inspired by D&D and a podcast I deeply love is called Dungeons and Daddies. And in honor of that podcast, this week's crit fail is the governor of quote New Ozai because he gets the bad dad award.
Yeah.
He rolls a nat one on profession parenting and just, it's bad, y'all. You can't like watch his son for even a second.
They lose their child to do their own ineptitude and then and neglect. And then, yeah, which by the way, neglect is found to be probably worse than just outright abuse. But at any rate, and they blame it, of course, on the resistance.
Yeah, yeah. They blame it on the other side, which is you just so like them.
Oh, yeah. My... I can't tell. So honestly, mine is going to be combined into one this episode.
Oh, all right. I like it. Interesting.
Mine is going to be the rhyme scheme of those two
old ladies
because
perform Busta Rhyme.
Yeah, because their rhyme scheme is awesome. And I give them A+ for creativity. And I can't tell if it was pure genius or pure stupidity that they got themselves fired. I would go with the former because I really think that no one wants to work for Azula. And they're like, fuck this. We don't want to carry around this palanquin. Let's get back. I don't want to be on this boat in the middle of fucking nowhere chasing down this girl's, like, grudge with that she has with her brother. So yeah, let's go back to the palace where it's nice and warm and we get to like actually live out our retirement.
But is that also the crit fail because they got fired?
Yeah,
so it's both. I yeah. Like it.
These ladies were super smart and actually got to go retire with turns out got to go live out their retirement with their cousin, Old Mother Brothel up right. In the mountains
yeah.
With her kitty Miyuki, was this a critical failure and they got themselves fired like anything that Dwayne was involved with in the office or Dwight was involved with in the office?
My crit success is we get a scene during the fight where Ty Lee attacks Katara and we get our first instance of chi blocking, which is a thing that is referred to heavily in Korra and sort of to people who watched Korra may have somewhat felt like it came out of left field, but in fact, yeah, even very early on in Avatar we get introduced to chi blocking as a concept. And so basically they can hit pressure points and disable someone's bending, which is pretty rad. And so she gets the effective she gets the award for being the most effective in that fight because she basically took one of them completely out of the running.
Yeah, I think it's in a very smart but subtle way we are introduced to this whole huge new element of the world.
Yeah. And that's gonna do it for us, folks. That's our episode.
Yeah, so thanks again. It's been a fun time as always. I love with you, babe, and it's been a great time, and I can't wait to our next episode.
The sound should be better because we changed our setup. We are now sitting across the table from one another, like a distanced wealthy couple,
like Amy Lee in the episode in her from Evanescence yeah. In Call Me When You're Sober video.
Yeah, the table gets longer to show their wealth, but they also get farther away to show their distance.
So but I guess that makes me the beauty and you the beast, babe.
It doesn't matter. It makes our sound way better. So we're happy with the sound quality of this episode. That's been it, guys. Our outro music is by Jay Curtis. Check him out on Instagram and Linktree.
In the meantime, tweet at us at CabbageCast.
And yeah.
Or email us at mycabbagecast@gmail.com.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Alex. And this has been
My Cabbages, an Avatar podcast.
Bye.
Bye.